Tonight, Vince Falzone is with us. He is a singer, songwriter, and on his MySpace page, 3 million people have listened to his music. We're going to talk all about that, and you get to listen to it tonight on the Kevin McDonald Presents. Vince is coming back with us right after these commercial messages. I hope that you'll stay with us because we'll be right back with Vince Falzone.
1150KKNW.com. It's why they invented the internet. We think. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Take this brush in my hand. And welcome back to the second hour of Kevin McDonald Presents for a Wednesday night. It's late night here on KKNW 1150 AM, and we have returned to our musical roots and have a great artist with us. He's on the phone. Vince Falzone is with us, and I'll tell you, I've been looking a lot of MySpace pages, and looking at, you know, if for those that, and I can't believe anybody is not familiar with MySpace, but in case you aren't, there are two statistics that I look at when we're talking about a musical person to come on the show. One is the number of times their profile has been viewed, and that's the number of people that have gone on the profile. And the other one is, well, there are three, actually. The other one is how many friends they have, because if you're on MySpace, you can go and out into cyberspace, and you can make friends with people, and then and you invite them onto your site and so forth, and they become your friend. And the third one is if they have music that's available on the site, how many times has each song been downloaded? And I was really struck when I went to Vince's MySpace page, because his music, he's got 4 songs loaded up there. He's got, and those songs have been collectively downloaded when we first talked and booked the interview, it was like about 2.8 million, and now it's over 3 million downloads of his music. And his site has been visited almost 100,000 times. And those numbers, by any measure, are huge. And so and his music is terrific. He's a singer-songwriter, and he does all the producing. He works with his own studio. His name is Vince Falzone, and he's with us on the phone. Vince, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Kevin.
Where are you calling from this fine day?
Well, I'm in California, so I'm just south of you, right?
Yes, just a couple hours south. And so tell me, were you as surprised as I would be if these hits started amassing and your music got downloaded so much? Because 3 million hits is a huge number.
Oh, it's ridiculous. And I was happy about it, but I couldn't believe it either, honestly.
Because that is like, and that's over what period of time?
I think I've had the account since 2005, a couple years.
So in 2 years, I suppose we could work that out by the day. It's like 600 days time. Do the math in your head, Tom. 600.
There's a reason why I'm involved with audio. One of them is that I don't like math, and math doesn't like me.
So it's like
it's mutual hate.
It's like tens of thousands of hits a day, probably at times, I would guess, right?
It's a lot.
I know, it's late at night, and who wants to do math late at night?
Yeah, I mean, like today, it's like 24,000 people played it.
24,000 people today only, and that is just huge. And we're getting, so everybody needs to hang with us, because we are going to play the music that is there, and some of the, and Vince is going to talk about what he does. And I'll tell you, there's a running joke here on the show, because one of my great influences, and I'll let Tom even say them, because he knows, and he gets so
Beatles.
I know, so tired of it. And so we were talking about it earlier, and I said, guess what his influences are, and he goes,
the Beatles.
It's the Beatles. And I said, no, and he said, really? And I said, no, it's Paul McCartney and Sting.
What's the difference?
Oh, man. You know, Kevin, it's not because I don't like the Beatles. I like the Beatles.
I got it.
It's just a little one-sided.
You've got
a
broader
branch.
Horizon.
You want a branch.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's why I'm doing the show.
Take your musical tree and grow new limbs.
This really is for my education more than anything else, because I've learned so much since we've started doing this format about so many different styles of music and how it came to be. And
that's good.
And that kind of stuff. It's very
that's
good.
Great.
I,
that's very good.
Matter of fact, I had no idea what drum and bass was. I thought that was like the bugle corps.
Before,
and I know that hurt you.
No,
but
that's
but
okay.
Now you've educated me, so that's great. So Vince, how would you describe, if you were to like describe your music, how would you describe it?
Well, you know, honestly, I grew up in the 80s, so back then, it seems like
I know,
a long
way
time.
Back then.
It was a while ago.
I mean, depends on who you are. I remember those days very, very well.
You do?
Oh, yes.
Come on, man. I was born in 1980, and it's my birthday today. Now, it was a while ago now. It's. I heard somebody refer to an 80s song as classic rock, and I about had a fit. But
well, just to put it into perspective, Vince, when he was born in 1980, that was the year that I turned 21 and had my... No, I turned 21 in 79, or 78, so that was my... Yeah. So you grew up in the 80s, and so you were familiar with the influences of the 80s, right?
Well, the guitar playing style, you know, I mean, Jimi Hendrix and Jimmy Page and Eddie Van Halen and Randy Rhoads and, I mean, Rush. If you couldn't play those things, you shouldn't have had, you can't have an instrument. You just, that was the rule. So we would play all that stuff, and it was just common. And then slowly, I mean, that style of guitar playing has kind of dwindled down. Everybody dropped D and stuff like that, and so I tried to fuse that type of guitar playing with what I liked, you know, the writing of the Beatles and all that stuff, but I tried to fuse that with a melodic pop thing and put those two things together. And today I try to fuse the drop D style and have the syncopation and all that kind of stuff with that kind of rock playing and make it current. So it's just a little bit of fusion, and that's all music ever has been. You know, they take one thing from an era that they're familiar with and then bring it current.
You said drop D style. Would you explain exactly, you know, like what that is?
Well, drop D is you take the top string of the guitar and you tune it to lower than what it normally is, so it gives it this very low roar to it. It also makes it easier to play. And that's what I've noticed about today, guitar playing, and people want it very easy. So instead of having to play the chord, you just put your finger across the top three strings and that's it, it's finished. And that alleviates having to learn how to play the chords, and it also stops you from learning the scales and the ability to play, the technical solos and stuff that used to be so common. I mean, they just don't exist anymore.
You mean guys like Eddie Van Halen and Jimi Hendrix and those guys, there isn't young folks out there doing that now?
Not as much. I mean, as I teach, I'm shocked. I'm sitting there, I say, all right, what do you want to learn? You know, give me some song names. Oh, about Back in Black. Like, all right. how about Crazy Train? I'm thinking, what is going on? You know, and I realize that, you know, the radio stations really have, they still play that stuff a lot, good and bad. I mean, it's good and stuff to still play the old songs, but it's bad because a lot of the new artists don't get their stuff played. But then again, you know, a lot of the new songs don't have that style of play. So, but the young kids are still wanting to play that, and it just shocks me.
Well, you know, that's what we've discovered here. In talking with the people that are out there, be it blues, be it, you know, rock or hard rock, whatever genre it is, that the music of the 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s are now kind of all out there. And the kids, and it's kind of almost like three generational. You've got baby boomers that remember those days and still think of them fondly. And then you've got, you know, the middle generation, then you got the kids, and they all kind of like the same stuff.
Yeah, and then there's the indie music scene, though, that allows artists everywhere to get their material. I mean, don't get me wrong, I think this stuff is great. I'm just very surprised that there really hasn't been a lot of new artists out there getting the material heard. Like, I'm looking at Guitar Tabs, and the top songs downloaded, Led Zeppelin, Stairway to Heaven. You know, and Sweet Child of Mine, Guns N' Roses, Lynyrd Skynyrd, Sweet Home Alabama, and Tears in Heaven, Eric Clapton. I mean, those artists have been out for a very long time, and they're still getting just, you know, far more popular today than they were when they were doing it.
Maybe people are trying to download the tabs for Stairway to Heaven because they know that that is one of these songs to know if you are trying to get the girl.
That's, yeah.
Break out the guitar and start playing Stairway, man. There you go.
Well, I think it's just a requirement to play. So, but that's what I try to do. It really does surprise me when kids 12, 13 years old tell me they want to play songs that I remember when I was growing up. Now, Iron Man, there's another one, number 18.
That one? Is that the one we're talking about?
Iron Man?
Yeah. Which... That's the one.
You were thinking Smoke on the Water.
That's right.
What that chord was.
That's the first one. Maybe there's no chords in that one either.
See, that's why I do this show. It educates me. So, now you picked up a guitar when you were a wee little one, or how did you get involved with music?
Yeah, I mean, like most artists, I mean, there's stuff that go to school, you get picked on at school, you get beat up at school, and you come home and your parents are yelling and screaming. So, you know, you pick up a guitar and you start playing that, and things start to change, and the kids don't pick on you as much because you can play. And then the stuff that's going on around you doesn't seem to bother you as much because you can just focus on your instrument. So I started playing in seventh grade.
And you've been playing ever since. Tell me about your studio. You built a studio, right?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I wanted to do is, you know, I got accepted to Berklee School of Music, and then my dad's like, we didn't even go to look at the school. He's like, well, son, you know, if you want to play, you could just go hit the bars and start now. And I'm thinking, what? You know, I mean, I didn't really do the bar thing back then, and so I was like, no, I don't think so. He said, you need to go get a degree so you can get a good job. Don't have to worry about it. So I went to school for engineering, but I still played all the time and everything, and I was hoping that, you know, I can build a studio to cover my recording costs because it was costing me. I had cut lawns and it was like $150 a song, you know, on a cassette recorder. And so I was learning from this guy that I was paying to do it with. And then when I graduated, I started buying the equipment to do it myself. And that's how it happened. And today you can, you know, it's like nothing but a computer.
Yeah, but and today you have 8 albums to date?
Yeah, but that's, you know, from writing years.
Well, yeah, but a lot of there aren't very many people that can honestly say that especially independents.
One of my big things was that I didn't want to I wanted to have the songs so that other people could hear them, so I always would record them. That was my big thing. You know, I was like, got to have something to show for. Like, even like if you put these bands together and they come and go because it's so difficult to hold the group together and all the other stuff that goes on. And now when you're done with that, you're like, okay, what do I have to show for that? Do I have any recordings of the band? Do I have any video of the band? Do I have anything to show for? And I always used to keep that stuff. I don't know why, but that's just what I wanted to do with it.
Well, it's kind of like gives you a time capsule of that particular moment in time.
Yeah, and you go back and listen to it, and you're like, oh, that wasn't bad, or that was terrible, or whatever, but at least you have it, and you can still work from it.
Now, when did you discover that you had the ability to write music?
I think when I was, you know, I was swinging on a swing when I was little, and I just started singing something, and then I'd go, oh, that was pretty good, and I figured I'd remember it, you know. I'd forget it. Then that's when I realized I could just, like, make up stuff. And some of the stuff's good, some of it's not. That's why whenever it hits you, you got to have a recorder with you, because you will forget it.
So is that now I've heard all kinds of different styles of how it happens for folks. In some, it's a real blood and guts kind of thing. They just kind of gut it out. In others, it just sort of appears. Is that how it is for you? It just magically appears and kind of like a dream?
Yeah, you'll just be playing along and then something will happen and you'll strike a sequence of chords or something that you like and then you work from that and build it up.
Oh, that's awesome. I'll tell you what, you know, we should probably go ahead and play one of your songs. Which song would you like to play first?
Well, you know, the one that's been getting the most attention is Time in a Jar. And that one I wrote actually in, I'm going to date myself again, 94.
You were just a wee pup.
You know, wee pup. And then this guy calls me up Congressman in 2004 because I had this little video running where I lived, and he's like, "Oh, I'm Pete Ordo." I'm like, "Who?" And actually, the guy won a Grammy Award with a group called Petra, a Christian group. And he said, "You know, I want to redo that with you." And I'm like, "Okay." So I looked him up and I checked him out and stuff, and we redid it. So we took a song that was 2 minutes, made it four, and made it a little more current.
Very good. So it was originally written in 94, and the gentleman's name again was?
Pete Orta.
And he's a Grammy winner, and he picked you out. How did he hear your music?
Well, he just happened to move here, and because I have this little TV show that I do in public access, and the video was playing for that song, so he called me from that.
Oh, very cool. See, now, I didn't get that in your bio that you have a TV show. Wait a minute, there it is. It's a musical TV. If I actually read the bio, it would probably be helpful, huh?
Oh, you just gave yourself away.
You know, the preparation time that we spend is hours on this show. So this is...
We're actually in here at 6 a.m. Every day.
Absolutely,
every
without
day.
Fail. And no matter how hungover you are, we are here.
Why do you point at me? What are you pointing at me?
It's your birthday week.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah.
All right, never mind.
So this is Vince Falzone, and the name of the song again, Vince, is?
Time in a Jar.
No shirt, no shoes, no problem. Come as you are. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Bring in light to shine upon this night.
And welcome back to Kevin McDonald Presents for a Wednesday night. But you're listening to Vince Falzone. He's calling to us from California, and he has the distinction. And I don't know of very many bands that can say this, that his music has been downloaded well over 3 million times on MySpace in the span of a couple of years. And that is a rare feat, because there are so many musicians and so many MySpace pages to get through all that noise and to find an audience. You're doing, Vince, you're doing extraordinarily well. And it's awesome for you, and it's awesome to see you do that.
Well, I appreciate that.
Now, we were talking a bit during the break, and a great deal of your fan base is overseas?
Yeah, it's mainly over in London, United Kingdom.
How did you develop that business?
Through Live 365.
Oh, what do you do with Live 365?
Well, Live 365 is an internet radio hosting place.
Yes, it is. I've actually got my own station there too.
And somehow I met this guy that was promoting, had a local radio show, and he had it through Live 365. And I was talking to him, and he said, "Well, you should look into that and see if you can start getting some of those stations to play your song." So I did that, and one of the stations that picked it up was a station called Hot UK, and they had a contest, and that song Time in a Jar won a contest. Like 5,000 people called in and voted for the song.
Wow.
So I said, well, you know, shouldn't I come out and follow that up by playing, you know, and doing some stuff with that? And they said, yeah, sure, you know. And so I set up a little tour just to check it out, because I wasn't sure if it was legitimate or not. And it was. Everybody loved it. So it was a great time. I played a bunch of festivals and everything like that.
Well, and because your music is being downloaded like 20, 25,000 times a day, it has quite an audience. And how do you, for the musicians that are listening and the folks that are interested in promoting their work, can you share with us some of the steps that you took to get the word out? Because I know that you're self-produced and you're self-managed and you're the head bottle washer and all that stuff.
I mean, it takes a lot. Every day you have to... first thing is that, you know, you got to let radio stations know you have the material. So you have to find the radio station's contact, try to contact them, let them know that you have it, and ask them if they would, you know, can play it possibly. The other thing is that you have to have a website, and MySpace gives them to you for free. But you have to work those websites. You know, that you got to let people know that you have it. They don't just go to it for no reason at all. And so it has to make it intriguing, put content up there and do newsletters, play, let people know that you have the sites and give out cards and stuff like that. And you just do that every day. And eventually, you know, it starts to build up.
So that, and by the way, now that you're talking about that, that is, generally speaking, how you market virtually anything. In this day and age of on the web, you know, a lot of folks, what they do is they put up a website and they say, oh boy, all these folks are going to come marching in. And the reality is that there are millions and millions of them, and you have to separate yourself to get through the noise, don't you?
Yeah, and you also need to have a website that's easy to remember. I didn't know that. You know, I mean, and before it was listed under a spelling you couldn't even spell. So nobody would go to it. You need to make it easy to remember so people can go to it and then just keep telling everybody about it. It's a daunting task.
Well, you're doing well. By the way, a website name that's really easy for me to remember is KevinMcDonaldPresents.com.
I wonder why it's that easy for you to remember.
You know, it's shameless self-promotion.
At its finest.
Absolutely.
At its finest.
But in order to reach an audience, and by the way, you can also podcast this episode when I get it up in a day or two, and so that's KevinMcDonaldPresents.com. Shamelessly self-promote yourself, and now here's the big thing, though, Vince. You have to have a product that people are interested in buying. Or interested in listening to, right?
Well, that's the other thing. You need to know what your songs are. What are your good songs? And the only way to know is to test them in front of people.
So it's almost kind of like market testing that corporations do.
It is, yeah. And the difference is your product, you can't put it on a shelf, which is why you have to have it on the radio stations. It's impossible to sell it without that.
And the difference is on internet radio stations, it is easier to get play than it is over the air radio stations. Is that true?
Yeah, it is. I mean, there's a local radio station we have over here, and my song, one of the songs that was playing was on the second record called You're So Fine. And I figured, wow, this is pretty easy. I went over there, and they're like, oh, we'll play that. I played it, and the next thing, they had me playing at a local restaurant and all this stuff, and I was on the paper, and I thought, this is easy, you know, this is no big deal. But not a lot happened from that, and I kind of wondered. I said, how come I never get any paycheck for it being played? You know? So I asked them, and they said, well, we don't report that we played that. You know, we kind of do it in between our downlink. And I'm like, well, that's great for you guys, but you know, I mean, how do you ever get recognized? And the thing about Live 365 is they do actually report it to, if you're a member of ASCAP or BMI, that it's been played. That way, you can get tracked, and then you get royalties for it.
Isn't that interesting? That's cool, because I know that Live 365, there's some stuff going on with Congress. They're trying to change.
Oh, they got all upset about that.
Yeah, they're trying to change how radio stations, specifically internet radio stations, are able to play that music. They wanted to raise what those fees were to a great degree that was going to drive a lot of internet radio stations, like, over the edge, because they don't have great revenue streams. And so, do you know where we are with that? Did that fail, or did that...
Well, they had this big thing, and it didn't happen. They didn't raise the rates as much.
Which
but the main people behind it was the RIAA, and they represent recording companies. And I think the record companies were getting kind of upset that they could no longer dictate what was played, because there's really ultimately like three or four major music providers via satellite. And if you're with them, then you get played all over the place. If you're not, then you have to try to do it on your own. And because the internet opened up for people like artists like myself to be able to go to different radio stations and say, hey, can you play this? And they would do it. There wasn't as much control as they had before, which, you know, I started to allude to it. You know, I mean, there's a reason why the kids still ask to be playing the older song. One of them is it gets played all the time. You know, I mean, you know what you hear.
That's true.
And a big part of that is it's been dictated what we can cannot hear on the radio waves.
Which is because, again, it's the large corporations that control most of the corporate radio stations, and they have a vested interest in playing songs and dictating. See, that's how the record business worked for years and years and years. Before, you know, before 1964, which was the British invasion and the Beatles, they pretty much controlled, you know, there's a period of time between when Elvis Presley came out and when the Beatles came out, that the record companies controlled who you listened to, i.e., Frankie Avalon and Pat Boone and all of these guys that they put out there. Didn't necessarily write their own material. Sounds eerily familiar to some of the stuff that's going on today. But they could control what was out there in the radio waves. They've, with the internet and shows like this, they're losing that control. And that scares them the dickens out of them, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, it's turned into a big revenue stream. I mean, when you think about the marketing behind an older song, it's had 40 years of airplay.
Right.
And so that generates a certain amount of sales, and that makes them a certain amount of revenue. If you can't control that part of it, then you really can't dictate that you will or will not get sales. And it's changed things a lot. I mean, like American Idol has changed things a lot. All they need to do now is bring up somebody and put them on American Idol, and that song the next day sells all kinds of stuff because of the amount of visibility that it's gotten. And it's turned into, okay, how quickly can we make a profit? Where before, they were investing money in bands and doing this and that, and they looked at it for a long-term deal, and that's not the case today.
No, they're really not interested in developing the band with a new sound and spending, you know, because let's face it, it costs a lot of money to promote a new band and to get them out there.
Yeah, well, they don't really do it that much.
No, they at this point, because their sales are also declining, and there are lots and lots of artists that are getting their work out there, like you, that are not affiliated with them, and so all of the sales that are generated by the music that you produce is flies under the radar. They don't have that, and they don't have an access to your revenue stream, as it were.
Right.
And that has to make them nervous. But for you, that gives you a world of opportunity, doesn't it?
Right, and that's what you see, is that there's a lot of, it's not like the music stopped coming out after the 90s, it hasn't. It's that it really hasn't had a chance, as much of a chance to get visible as it did in the past. And so now that you can go ahead and do it yourself, you're able to control a lot more about who hears it and who doesn't. You know, you're able to give it more of a lifespan than it's had in the past.
Exactly. And you can also, you know, do things like come on this show, and we can actually even play your music. And I'd like to play another song. Hey, how about that?
Sounds great to me.
Which song shall we play this time?
You know, there's a rock song that I just did, and I'm not sure if you have it. It's called Kick It. And
I don't have Kick It. Is it on MySpace?
It is on MySpace.
We may be able to, if we stall just long enough, the wizard who calls himself Tom the Wizard over there, is may be able to pull it off and we could do so. Yeah, because I like that song, Kick It. My son, by the way, liked that song, Kick It, and he's 16.
Yeah, that's a drop D song.
Oh, is it? So it's a cool song. Now, how did that song come to be?
Same way. I was playing some chords, and I liked the way that they sounded, and then those words seemed to fit it, and I went with it.
Very cool. I think we're getting dangerously close. Oh, we're set. We're cool. We're ready to go. We're gonna play this song.
Cool.
Right now.
Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back to Kevin McDonald Presents for a Wednesday. And that is Vince Falzone. He's calling to us from California. His MySpace. He has a distinction of having his MySpace page, his the music there, which, by the way, if you go to MySpace.com/ one of the slashes, Vince Falzone, and that's F-A-L-Z-O-N-E dot, or forward slash Vince Falzone, and you can go to his MySpace page, and you can be one of the thousands of people who download his music on a daily basis. And Vince, you also have your own webpage. What's that?
It's that one's the easy one. It's musicbyvince.com.
Musicbyvince.com. And that is, speaking from the promotional Bible that you subscribe to, that is how you should put a website out there, make it real easy so people can remember it.
Yeah, you want, yeah. The thing is, you're working hard to try to get traffic to it, so you want to make sure that they can remember what your URL is.
Yeah, so musicbyvince.com. And you know, that's almost as easy as KevinMcDonaldPresents.com.
Yeah, almost.
What we're all trying to do is to drive traffic so that we can do some stuff and get a little bit wider audience.
Yeah, that's it.
That's right. Now, you have a new album coming out in early 08, do you not?
Yes.
What's the title of that one going to
be? That one's Strip of Leather. That's the song you just played, Kick It, is part of that.
Oh, cool. And did you have any idea when that's coming out?
It should be ready, like, first. I always like the release in January.
Okay.
But I have a few more songs I need to finish up on it, and it will be done.
And all of your music, by the way, is also on iTunes and Rhapsody and MSN Music, right?
Yes, the stuff that's been officially released. Like right now, Strip of Leather has not been officially released.
Aha.
And so that's not up there yet, but it will be once the record's finished.
Now, are you going to have a release party, or as I like to say, a coming out party?
Yeah, I will. We'll do that.
Okay.
It just kills me that you call it the coming out party, because every time you say it, inevitably whoever is in the studio live with us, watching their facial expression is priceless. Priceless.
Which is precisely why I do that.
It's good. It's good. I love it. I love it. I think it makes my day, actually.
Well, you see, it's kind of like the way I look at it is like this is a piece of your soul. That you're releasing to the world, and it's coming out to the world, and it's kind of like that, especially with someone like you who writes your own music, produces your own music. This really is a piece of you, isn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, as an artist, you would like it to be.
Suppose if you just threw out, you know, stuff that didn't mean anything to you, it'd be kind of pointless. Right? So it has to be something that you really enjoy and has to be good.
Good's relative. I mean, there's so many different styles of music and art. You just need to like it. You need to be happy with what you put out.
Because you don't really know if a song is going to resonate with people until it resonates with people.
Yeah, you have no idea what songs they're going to like either.
Do you get surprised sometimes?
Yeah, I mean, like, I put a song out on the last record called Sway. People really like that, and that was just to finish the record. I need to finish the record, and we'll do this. And they liked it, so I've been told it's the ones that you don't really care, you don't really pay much attention to that people like.
Is there a tendency when you are a singer-songwriter and you're doing your own producing to overproduce?
There is. Yeah, and you know what I found out, it took me all this time to figure it out. The best thing to do is to bring in the real instruments and real players and have them work to the song rather than you fabricate it or something like that, or try to overanalyze it and make it perfect timing and all this other stuff. That's not really as important as getting the feel across.
You know, I couldn't agree more, and I really enjoy music that is produced the old-fashioned way where actually people are, you know, like playing all at the same time. And it's something that they're in a studio and they've practiced it and they're actually putting it out there. And it may not be technically as perfect, but it has more of an emotional feel to me.
That's the most important thing, is to capture the feel. And I didn't realize that until record 8, you know.
Well, but, you know, it's like guys that like you that are very experienced and very talented and stuff. See, I would love to take, and we've discovered this in the studio. And if you, when you come up here on tour, I'd love to have you in the studio to play acoustically, because some of the guys that have never played their music acoustically, that they generally play with electric guitars. They come here and they play it acoustically. It sounds completely different, but it's got a certain type of energy that is better than what they produce, you know, bit by bit in the studio with 60 tracks and voiceovers and all that kind of stuff.
Right. And one of the things that was frustrating when I was working with Pete is that we'd come in and he'd have me sing like, you know, 3 seconds of the song. And it's just so hard to get into it and do just 3 seconds of it. But, you know, that's the way that he wanted to do it. And I don't do it that way. I'm like, you know, either you go through and do a whole take of it or you don't. And that just requires your musicianship to be a little differently. Because I just can't record if I can't do the whole track, because I can't get into it enough to just do a section of it. Now, if there's a certain spot that needs to be fixed, that's another issue. It's just that's the way that I go about it.
See, now, I kind of equate this process is being real similar to the difference between acting on stage and acting in TVs or movies. Because in TV and movies, stay with me here. I'll connect the dots. Honest, I will.
I already know where you're going.
Oh, okay.
I'm 5 steps ahead of you right now.
Perfect. Well, if you are, everybody else is as well. But I'm going to say it anyway.
Maybe they're not. This is my job. I'm trained at this stuff.
Oh, okay. It's like if in the movies, that is a director's medium. The director can decide and dictate how your acting will appear to the general public when the film is finally done. On stage, you're it. That's it. The performance is the director can do the blocking and get it all done, but you, as the performer, are the final. You know, what the audience sees is what you produce in its entirety, rather than little itty bitty bits that are spliced together by a director and a film editor and all those guys.
Right.
And so I prefer, and this is just a personal preference, I suppose, but I prefer the live, you know, all in one, you know, energetic performance of somebody who really does a great job, like you.
Oh, I appreciate that.
Yes. See, I told you I'd connect the dots. Now, we're going to play one more song before we go, and we don't have a lot of time. So what song shall we play?
I think you may have Overdrive.
We don't have Overdrive either.
Don't have that one.
No. Which ones do we have downloaded, Tom?
We've got I Believe, Sway, and Time in a Jar, which we already played.
Might as well go after Sway, because that's the one that I didn't pay much attention to. I had a celloist come in and play a little bit on it. You know, that one sold the most on iTunes for me.
Cool. And that one's like six, or how many times has that been sold on iTunes?
I don't know. I just know it's been sold the most.
Okay, cool. And, again, we've been talking with, because I'm not sure if we're going to run out of time, but we are, I've been informed, of Vince Falzone has been our guest, and we're going to leave with this song. And the name of, again, the song is for Vince is?
Wait, it stands for So What Are You.
And if you want to go to Vince's page, it is musicbyvince.com or his MySpace page. It's just / Vince Falzone. So it's been great having you here, and we're going to leave with this song right now.